Welcome to the BioFit module on nutrigenomics. I'm excited to be sharing with you today how you can use your knowledge of nutrigenomics, how you can understand the nutrigenomics related to specific organ systems in the body, and then use this as part of your session along with BloodChem to help people to understand what's going on, what they're at risk for, what present imbalances are there, and how you are the ideal person to help them solve that. So before we begin, I'm always, like usual, going to share that this is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not intended as medical advice. It's just a sharing from my knowledge, my expertise in over 30 years of health practice that I've learned to help you to be able to help your clients to achieve the health that they desire and that they deserve. So let's jump in. So we'll start with the basics. This might be a review for most of you, but I want to make sure that we're all on the same page with terminology and the basic understanding of genetics and nutrigenomics. So we all are born with a genome, and that's the DNA, the genes that we inherit from our parents. There are chromosomes, and we, as humans, have 23 pairs of chromosomes. We inherit one set from mama and one set from dad. And within each chromosome is DNA. And the DNA is this double-stranded helix. And in there is the blueprint, basically, that makes you who you are. Each chromosome codes for specific traits at specific points along the way. And we'll go into that in more detail in a bit. So the DNA, that double-stranded helix within each chromosome, which is within every cell in the body, we have a set of specific chemical compounds. One is a sugar, one is a phosphate, and then there's four different types of nucleotide bases that it can be. It can be adenine, thymine, cytosine, or guanine. And at each point along the way where these come together, there's one of those four bases. When we uncoil the DNA, and remember, the DNA is in the chromosomes, which are in the cells. So it's really microscopic, yet if you uncoil it, it's 6 feet long. The miraculousness of the human body is just, it floors me. So what else? We have nutrigenomics. What is nutrigenomics? You hear that term a lot. It's really the study of the effects of food and constituents of food on the expression of the genes. We know that just because you have a particular set of genes, you're not going to express all of those traits in all the areas of the body. So for example, the back of the hand has genes for the eyeballs, but those aren't being expressed there. Now, nutrigenomics doesn't control the expression of those eyeball genes on the back of the hand because every cell in the body has that. But what it does do is helps us to either turn on or off some of the traits that are related to biochemical pathways. And so it's also the influence the other direction of genetic variation on nutrition. So if we're devoid of certain nutrients, we're not going to see the same expression as if we need magnesium and we have the magnesium. It's also the correlation between what's called single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs is what we call them, and the way that a nutrient is absorbed, some of the things related to metabolism, elimination, and other biological effects. So here's the thing. SNPs are what most people call mutations. They are not mutations, and we'll see why in a moment. They are variants. There's variance between people. And the nutrigenomics helps us to provide a means to optimize nutrition with respect for somebody's genotype. So somebody with a particular genotype and a particular set of genes and a particular set of variants may need different nutrient values than somebody without. And we'll get into this more as we go through the module. So then you've probably heard the term epigenetics. Epigenetics is like a layer that sits on top of the genes. And it doesn't change the sequence of the DNA, but alters the way that genes are expressed. And, you know, it's interesting with epigenetics. We know that mama and daddy together pass on their genes to their offspring. But there's also evidence that we pass on some of the epigenetic changes. And so there's specific cells called stem cells, and they get their organ-specific functions turned on through epigenetic processes. It's really fascinating. And we'll go through the environmental impacts on the next slide. A change in gene expression can result from all kinds of environmental factors. And when they go beyond like the tipping point, like the point at which damage occurs, then we get things like cancer cells and the turning off of tumor suppressor genes. Diet and lifestyle is the biggest influence on epigenetics. So here's a picture. Environmental factors affect the epigenome. So just because you're born with certain genetic traits, just because mom had specific traits, just because dad did, or your sisters or brothers, doesn't mean that you're going to have this. We have to be really careful as we're talking to patients and clients to let them know, just because your family history shows that you have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's, doesn't mean that you are going to get Alzheimer's. It has to do with your diet, the toxins and drugs you're exposed to, inflammation, hypoxia, low oxygenation to tissues, the maternal care, and things that happen to you in early experiences. Like when there's a lot of fear and stress and danger in a household, the child is going to express things very much differently. There's also aging, you know, things change. And as we age, certain exposures build up or toxic levels build up or certain parts of the body get weaker as we age, like the ability to detoxify. So as we are exposed to more toxic, the whole toxic burden over a lifetime increases, the ability to take care of that decreases. And of course, there's so many chemicals in our environment and there's exposure to radiation. So all of this affects the gene expression, the gene stability, the ability of the gene to repair itself. And when, like I said, we hit a tipping point, it becomes difficult for the cell to repair. That's when mutations occur. So let's talk about methylation. We hear about methylation a lot. I like to think of methylation as a game of hot potato. We're passing around a methyl group, carbon and three hydrogens, and we're passing it from one chemical to the next until it gets to the source. So it's the process of creating specific tags, they're called methyl groups, that affect the expression of a gene. So DNA methylation is either the maintenance or change to DNA by adding or removing methyl groups or the silencing of gene expression. SAMe and methionine cycle, probably seen this if you've seen pictures of all the stuff that goes on in genetics, is known as the methylation cycle because it can affect DNA methylation, and it's the major generator of these methyl groups. Why are these methyl groups so potent and so important to be looking at? Well, we need to have methylation occurring for a whole bunch of reasons, and I'll show you what those are in a moment. Here's some of the things that are called methyl donors. They actually have the methyl groups that they pass on to the next and the next and the next in a chemical chain. So SAMe, folate, vitamin B12, trimethylglycine, TMG, dimethylglycine, DMG, and also DMAE. So let's take a look at what the functions of methylation are. Well, we turn genes on and off and synthesize DNA via methylation. DNA processes toxins. There's specific pathways in the liver, liver phase 2. There's some methylation pathways in there that detoxifies certain toxins. It helps to build and metabolize neurotransmitters, epinephrine, norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine, and melatonin. These are important functions, right? They process hormones like estrogen. We have a whole process of methylating estrogen to make them less toxic than the other versions. Helps to build immune cells like T cells and natural killer cells. Helps to produce energy. It's part of that Krebs cycle. CoQ10, carnitine, creatine, and ATP. Reducing myelin sheaths. These are important, right? The sheaths around the nerves that help increase the transmission rate. And finally, building and maintaining cell membranes, like as in phosphatidylcholine, right? The membranes of the cells. And when we look at digestion, we'll see the importance there. When we look at neurotransmitters in the nervous system, we'll see the importance there. So let's get to the elephant in the room, SNPs. single nucleotide polymorphisms. We're going to be talking a lot about SNPs. We're going to be identifying SNPs. And you have to be able to explain to your clients, to your potential clients, to your patients, what SNPs are without losing them, without overwhelming them, and with motivating and inspiring them to make a difference. So if we look here, we have two strands of DNA. And if at a particular point, we're supposed to have a AA or AT or whatever, and we have a variation in that, the C is substituted for a T or whatever, it varies, right? CGTA, okay? That's called a SNP, a single nucleotide polymorphism. It's one change in one nucleotide. There are 10 million SNPs that have been identified, and 500,000 of them can be tested. So there's various variations. So version one, we have an A. Version two, we have a C. Version three, we have a G. And version four, we have a T. This is called a SNP. And you may wonder, how did anybody ever figure this out? Well, we figured out that the SNPs are responsible for lots of stuff, not just variations in our biochemistry, but also in our physical traits. So 3 billion base pairs, there's a single base pair that can get added, deleted, or substituted. And sometimes on reports, you're going to see deleted. Sometimes you're going to see where it should be an AA, it's a TA or a TT, okay, or whatever the variations are, substituted. So there might be an additional base pair. So there's 10 million SNPs that we know of in the human genome. And most don't lead to anything we know about. Most have not been identified as any real important thing, but they may lead to normal variations. So if I have brown eyes and you have blue eyes, there's a SNP, a single nucleotide polymorphism, that causes that. Other SNPs will contribute to disease or nutrient imbalances. Maybe there's a SNP in the vitamin genes that make or absorb vitamin B6, and we may get nutrient imbalances from that. There may be a specific SNP that contributes to a disease, and one that we know of that is a very single focus there is cystic fibrosis. Most of it is like you increase a risk, but in this case, if you have that SNP, you're going to get cystic fibrosis, okay? Very rare to have it that way, to have it so black and white. But it can contribute to pathway imbalances in the creation of neurotransmitters, in the breakdown of neurotransmitters, and so on. And we're going to be going through the variety of these throughout this module. Here's the thing. A SNP can cause that pathway to either go faster or slower. And we can't really predict this in advance. We know that some of them cause fast and some of them cause slow, but there's so many out there that there's no tried and true like chart that says this particular SNP makes this go faster, this particular one makes it go slower. I will say that most of them that I've looked at make the pathway go slower, but there are a few that make it go faster, and it could be just as much, just as problematic, or maybe even more so. So let's take a look at the SNPs and the relationship to physical traits. So this guy is 98.5% the same as you. He doesn't look a lot like us, except he has eyes and a nose and ears and fingers and toes, right? But there's a huge difference. You can tell the difference between a chimpanzee and a human, but 98.5% of the genes are the same. Let's look at this one. Those are a lot of different people. There are a lot of different traits, right? 99.5% the same. You and I, and you and these people in this picture, and you and, well, you're probably more the same if you have a sibling, and you're definitely a lot more the same if you have an identical twin sibling. But within families, that number goes higher. But outside of families, 99.5% the same. And you can see what differences in physical traits that 0.5% contributes to. Imagine when we think about all the biochemical pathways and the kind of things that it can be contributing to. So in order to know, does somebody have specific SNPs and what SNPs they have and what risk does that put them at, we have to test. So there's a number of options. This isn't an all-inclusive list. There's a lot of these that keep coming out. 23andMe has been probably around the longest, although I think Genova Diagnostics started before 23andMe, but they were so outrageously expensive that, you know, the common person, average person could not do it. It was like, oh, you want to do the detox SNPs? It's $700. Oh, you want to do the estrogen SNPs? It's another $700. And it could add up and it could be like $3,500 to do what's not even as complete as the 23andMe. So we have 23andMe and Ancestry. When they first started 23andMe, the differentiation was that it had more health SNPs, health-related SNPs. But my understanding is that now they're very similar. They're just different in the terms of which SNPs. There may be a variation. I haven't done Ancestry to know. There's also Self-Decode. Self-Decode is set up so that you can either run the testing through them, or you can upload the reports from 23andMe or Ancestry. When Ben Lynch's company had it, they called it Stratagene, and they stopped actually doing the testing, but that could be uploaded if you still have that through Self-Decode. Then there's Genova Diagnostics. I already mentioned about that. SpectraCell, they just do MTHFR. Last I looked, maybe they've expanded, but just MTHFR, C677T, and 1298C. Those are two RSIDs. We'll get more into what those are as we go through. But SpectraCell, as far as the last time I looked, just did the MTHFR. And what happened was, as this genetic testing started to get a little bit more commonplace, a lot of doctors who are conventionally trained, Western trained, not really trained in nutrition and functional medicine, they would just do MTHFR and they would say, oh, you have an MTHFR. We're going to put you on 15 milligrams of folate and, you know, 5 milligrams of B12, and it's methylated, and this is going to solve your problem. But that was naive. They didn't know what we're going to be teaching you about all the different variants and the interactions between the variants. And then there's one of the new kids on the block is 3x4 genetics. They run it and they do a report. Last I heard, they did not give you access to raw data. I'll explain what that means in a moment. There's another one that I didn't list here. It's called the DNA Company, relatively new. The reason I didn't list it, I actually did the report. And from what I could see, there was no way to get access to the data. And you had to watch videos in order to do it. And quite frankly, I don't have time to sit around watching videos every time I want to look somebody's genetic traits up. So I didn't list it here, but the DNA Company, they also claim to do a customized nutrition report, like a supplement report based on what they find. And I disagree with that concept because there's so much more to it than just looking at the DNA. You know, there's history, there's the exposures, there's the nutrition, and of course, there's lab testing to confirm this stuff. So these are the ones I still mostly use 23andMe, even though I'm starting to get a little jaded by it because I've tested a bunch of them and it seems the most cost-effective and the most economical, although let's just leave it at that. And then we'll talk about raw data in a moment. So genomic interpretation options. You can, up until recently, all of these places let you download, or most of them let you download what's called the raw data. The raw data, I'll show you what that looks like in a moment, but it's basically a table, like a huge, huge, huge database, a file, basically a text file that contains all of the genes and all of the SNPs and all of the variants that you're going to find in a person. When you can download that raw data, you can get access to a lot of great reports. The stuff that 23andMe does and Ancestry in terms of health, they're just not, I don't find them useful for us as clinicians to be able to understand the biochemical pathways. So I like to use these. Genetic detoxification right now only works with 23andMe. True Report Nutrigenomics will work with 23andMe, but also with Ancestry. Genetic Genie, I think, is just 23andMe, and it's very short. It's free. It's short. The Genetic Detoxification and True Report are pretty darn good in terms of organization and makes it easy for you to explain to people. Self-Decode is amazing, except for somebody to just you know, do it on their own and start to look things up, or for you to explain it to them, you have to actually go in and generate reports on all of this stuff. And it can be overwhelming because they test so many genes. And I'll show you some of those reports as well. Stratagene, again, you can put in 23andMe and Ancestry or Self-Decode, I believe. I'm not sure if they allow that anymore. Sterling's app was one of the very first ones. It's very simple and straightforward. And it's just like a 45-page list of all the SNPs. They're somewhat organized, but not as nicely organized as Genetic Detoxification or True Report. I've tried Prometheus. I didn't care for it. That was years ago. Opus 23, I took a day-long class on that, and I've yet to finish my case study, so I don't really have access. It has some interesting ways to do things. And then Genetic Life Hacks, I recently discovered that, and I really like the reports they give you. They give you a lot of data, and you can still see a tabular view of the SNPs, but you can like click on things in that report and have more information and learn a whole lot more. I like it a lot. Found My Fitness has a nice report and they have a lot of information, but it's not as complete as some of the others. Okay, so with it, 23andMe, so the raw data, show you what that looks like in a moment, is not downloadable anymore. There was a recent breach. As of when you're listening to this, that might have been resolved and it may be available. They're saying that it's just temporary and they're trying to put things in place to protect our data. So this is where you would go. You would click that. And when you click it and you say, it says raw data, it takes you to another screen that looks like this. But you see here, as an added security measure, we have temporarily disabled the ability to download your raw genetic data. We hope to re-enable this soon. So hopefully by the time you're watching this or, you know, a little bit after, this is going to come back. However, what I did discover is that the raw data is still here. You just can't download it. So if you know a gene that you're looking for, in this case, I just put in MTHFR, it will find it, and then down below, it's going to have a list of the RSIDs. RSIDs are research IDs, and there's one associated with each SNP. You may have one gene that has like, you know, 15 or 20 RSIDs. Most of them have no clinical significance that we've discovered yet. There are plenty, and we'll be going through it in this module to share with you which ones are important for you to be aware of, and to have these great tables and charts that when you get somebody's data back, you can look up. If you get someone who you're very concerned about a particular area of like blood sugar, and I have a chart, a 16-page chart of a lot of the SNPs, not all of them, on blood sugar balance, but they're not all going to show up in the reports I told you about. So you may have to come in here. So you take it and maybe the SNP is called XYZ73. You look that up, and if 23andMe tested it, it will show it up here. I don't know how this works on Ancestry. Like I said, I haven't done it, but I'm guessing it's similar. Just to give you an idea of what this looks like, this was generated back in 2013 when they had a very complete set of SNPs, but this is a text file that goes on and on and on. It's 12 megabytes big, and this is what it looks like. You and I, as normal human beings, are not going to be able to tell what the heck this is. It's not even showing the gene name. It's not showing MTHFR or SAME or any of that. It's just showing the RSIDs. So it takes a software program to take these, know these, be programmed with these, and then interpret them into a chart. When you see output from those reports, from those various SNP interpretation reports, this is how it's usually presented. Homozygous negative is green. It means you didn't inherit what's called a risk allele, what we also call sometimes mutations, or a minor allele. It's the one that, you know, puts a person at risk. So for example, maybe there's a particular one, like let's just say LPA. LPA is lipoprotein little a, very heavily involved with heart disease. And it may say that the risk allele is this particular one, T or A or G or CTGA, right? One of those. But in green, you didn't inherit any of those. So you're at the lowest risk category for that. If it's yellow, it's heterozygous. It means you inherited one of the two risk alleles. And if it's red, it means that mom and dad, you won the lottery. Mom and dad both gave you a risk allele. And the risk factor associated is going to be different depending on what pathway it's coding for. But if you figure that homozygous negative means that pathway has the potential to function at 100%. I say potential because remember epigenetics, right? But say it's at 100%, then compared to that 100%, if it's heterozygous, that pathway might be functioning at 70 to 90%. If it's homozygous, it could be functioning as low as 20, 25%. It's not saying that it doesn't do anything. It's just saying that there's a reduced efficiency and effectiveness of that pathway. Here's an example from genetic detoxification. I like this one because of the way it's laid out. I don't like certain things that are missing in it. And I know that Christy Sutton, who's an amazing clinician, speaker, writer, educator, she's the founder of this. And she's always, researching. And then periodically she has updates to increase this. But this is how they lay out detoxification. Phase one, phase two glutathione, phase two acetylation. One of the things I do, and I'm going to share this in the last section, the last video of this, after you've learned all this other stuff, you're going to learn how to put this into action. I'll share with you how I, in the detoxification, help people to see some of the actions they can take if they have SNPs in these areas. So stay tuned, make it to the end, and you'll get access there. Okay. So you can see the greens, the yellows, and the reds, right? This person is going to be mostly inhibited on the CYP1B1, the CYP2C1917, and then the CYP2E1. So now here's the thing. You see where it says page number? Christy Sutton, who's the founder of this test, wrote a book. And the book is called Genetic Testing, Defining Your Path to a Personalized Health Plan. And in that book, she describes what these are. So if you're like, what the heck is CYP1B1? I have no idea. You look at page 31 to 34, and she has a very nice layout. It's meant for the lay person, so it's very easy to read. If you want more in-depth science, you have to look it up elsewhere, but she goes pretty in-depth, right? She's more for our geeky patients who love to nerd out on this stuff, okay? So that's what this is. And you'll get more in the detoxification. Here's another. This is one I wanted to show you because somebody can have perfect detoxification pathways, but they're NR1I2, the genes necessary to initiate detox, might be hosed. Or in this particular case, very good detoxification initiation, but there's a bunch of reds and yellows, so it's still going to be sluggish. So this is one I like to look at because people go, oh, look, I'm good at this and I'm good at aflatoxin and heterocyclic amines, but you can't initiate it. So the basically the pathway that allows the liver to differentiate and say, oh, there's a problem here, isn't working very well. Okay. So then herbicide and pesticide detoxification. So these are further differentiators. Somebody likes to have their glass of wine every night and they have reds and yellows in the alcohol detoxification genes. You have leverage to talk to them about this. And again, this is overview. Don't get bent out of shape yet. We're going to go through all of these sections and help you to understand how to explain to people the mental health genes, right? BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. This is the brain's ability to heal itself and recover from assaults and things that damage it. Like in this particular case, there's some issues with mental health genes. And this person needs to take care of these things, right? PEMT, phospholipids. We'll go through the details on this. There's some on the Alzheimer's. So I'm just showing you this. We're going to have a whole video for you that's going to take you through how do you explain this? I'm going to go through and explain how I would explain it, maybe to somebody who's already in a program versus how do I explain it to somebody who's not in my program yet, but we're offering this genes and blood chem session to help them to help you to sign up a client. You don't want to overwhelm them. Once they're in, You still don't want to overwhelm them, but you might be giving them a little bit more in the how-tos related to these. So more to come. So let's just look at tying this together. We've got resources that we're giving you in here that are charts that say, oh, here's the history and here's the blood chem and here's what genes might be associated. You'll have all that. And I recommend don't bug yourself to try to memorize it all. You'll start to understand it more and more and be more familiar as time goes on and as you are looking at more and more. But print out the cool charts that we're giving you. Keep them in a binder, keep them near wherever you're doing your consultations, whether they're in-person consultations or online. So these are some of the ones that we're going to be covering here in this BioFit module. And I'm not going to read them all, but we're going to go through all of these. There's ways that we're going to learn. You're going to learn all of these. Now, will you have a memory bank of knowing what all these things are? No. You're going to get that as you do it. So the best thing you can do is take the information and go out and do it. Run your own. Run your mother's, father's, sister's, brother's, husband's, wife's, girlfriend, boyfriend, cousins, whoever you can get a hold of if you don't want to do it with real clients yet. But do it. The more you do it, the more you're going to understand it and the more proficient you're going to be. So once you find these things, I'm just going to give you a what's to come, a little overview of what do you do when people have these SNPs in these different areas. Oh my gosh, they have a whole bunch of cardiovascular SNPs. Well, you got to look at what is in the environment around it. They have a whole bunch of cardiovascular SNPs and they have an impeccable lifestyle and they don't have any symptoms and their labs are beautiful. You just let them know this is a risk factor. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't run the risk of eating hamburgers and hot dogs and all that kind of stuff. So this is the way I think we should be looking at it. If we just look at a small thing, if we just look at the SNPs, we just look at a particular lab test, we just look at a history, we just look at one system in the body, whether it's a cardiovascular or a specific hormone, we're not going to get the full perspective because without the whole perspective, it feels different, right? So the leg of that elephant, it feels like a tree. The body feels like a wall. The ear feels like a fan. If we're not looking at the whole thing, we have no idea that that's an elephant, right? Same thing with our clients. So there are a small percentage of genes that we currently know about that have a one-to-one cause and effect relationship. And as I mentioned earlier, cystic fibrosis is one. But the body has compensatory processes. And if you just measure one area and then you focus on just that one area, it could require something to be balanced in another area. So when we're looking at this, we want to make sure that we're looking at the whole person. And before we address the individual SNPs, we want to look at our foundational lifestyle and diet. In NEPT, we have a whole module on the pillars, the seven pillars, and that includes the clean, whole, fresh foods, fun, rest. It's called what's called the freedom pillars, fun, rest and sleep, environment, exercise, diet, outlook, and mindfulness. And those are all the things that we need to have in balance before we go running around trying to find the right bioidentical hormone or the right herb for this or that. If somebody's eating like crap and they're not exercising and they're stressed to the max, all those things are not going to really put a dent in what's going on. Many people are taking vitamins that have synthetic folic acid, although awareness has been raised over the last few years about this. And many manufacturers, at least the reputable ones that I use, have removed that from their vitamins. But we want to make sure that we watch that because when we talk about methylation and detox, you're going to see the damage that folic acid does in interfering with the utilization of methylfolate in the demethylation pathways. We got to look at gut healing, pathogen removal, right? That is super important base. Blood sugar balance. Somebody's running around with their blood sugar up and down and up and down. They're at high risk. No matter what herb you put them on, you have to get the blood sugar balanced. Addressing mitochondrial dysfunction, the energy mechanisms in each cell. We ought to look at homocysteine. Homocysteine is a critical hormone that affects thyroid receptors, that affects cardiovascular risk, that affects brain health. we have to look at B vitamins, right? Getting it from food, but a lot of people can't get it from food, or they've been so depleted that they need to be supplemented, and we have to make those decisions. And then adrenal support and adaptogens and thyroid support. All of this stuff is core before we go and say, oh, you have this XYZC SNP. We got to give you this supplement. That's why I have objection to the companies that say, oh, just give us your DNA and we'll give you a customized supplement program. It doesn't work that way. I wish it was that simple. So your action plan, regardless of what module we're in here or what unit we're in here in teaching you about the various places, is you get testing, you download the raw data, you look up genes in the raw data, or you run them through the reports like Genetic Detox and Genetic Life Hacks, Genetic Genie, MTHFR Support, Metabolic Healing Strategy. Those are the ones at the time of this recording that are available. Then you correlate that with their history, with their labs, to see, are these genes really having an effect right now? Maybe their epigenetics factors are so powerful that regardless of the gene, they're okay. But you still have to help them to see that they have to watch this. They should be evaluated on a regular basis to make sure that those genes aren't really causing a high risk. And then you help them create a customized plan. Okay, this is what we're going to be going through here. We're going to look at all of the sections that we looked at already in the blood chem module. So if you haven't looked there, go back and review it. But we're looking in relatively the same order, although there's not a one-to-one correlation exactly, but we're looking through that. And we're going to start with blood sugar, and we're going to move on to kidneys, electrolytes, and fluids. We're going to go on to the digestion, and we're going to keep going. Okay, so we're going to spread this out over time. I highly recommend that you set aside a few hours every week to go through these videos. We're trying to keep them short. We're giving you a lot of extra information that you can use to look things up so you don't have to memorize things. So are you ready to jump in and get started? Let's go.